does is reaches into your brain chemically and locates your happiest memory chemically, and then locks onto that emotion and freezes it chemically, and then it keeps your happy happy.
Hello, 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 and thank you for tuning in to the Selling Out Show, where we screw up life at our leisure for your listening pleasure. I am one of your hosts, David Schultz, and over here, via the wonderful worldwide webs, the information superhighway, is my partner in crime, Nathan Gorzinski. Nate, how are you, buddy?
I'm great, man. I'm living this virtual world.
Yeah, you're the lawnmower man over there. Look at you.
Yeah, man. I don't know. I'm a walking meme.
Yeah. Yeah, you are. You are meme-tastic. I don't know what
how
the caption would read.
Me neither.
But you are, yeah, something. Maybe you're an NFT.
Could be.
We can digitize you and sell you.
Okay.
I guess that's the hot thing. I heard that stuff. Real quick. This wasn't a planned thing about NFTs. We're not talking about NFTs today, folks. So this is just a Dave tangent, if you will, going into the weeds. But when those first started coming out, everybody goes, hey, how stupid is that idea, right? It's a piece of digital art that you own exclusively, but anybody could take a screenshot of and, you know, basically share whenever they want. Idiots paying all this money for it. And then people were actually doing that and making bucket loads of cash over the whole damn thing. But look where we are now. They look like fools because the market is crashing on NFTs. So enjoy that fad.
Who could have seen that?
Yeah, I got a beanie baby to sell you. That's what I got. Yeah, I got a seat on the Titanic. I would love to sell you. But we are going to talk about some fun stuff today. We got an action-packed episode. Nate might do some karate chops and kicks. Maybe some back flips, whatever it takes to provide said action.
We'll see.
Yeah.
If you're lucky.
The day is young. Mm-hmm. So we'll definitely see where that goes. But first off, I am so excited. I just can't hide it. I know something or other, because the Kids in the Hall have made their triumphant return on Amazon Prime. Now, if you have listened to this show with any regularity over the past, I don't know, basically handful of years, you would know that we love those Kids in the Hall from Canada. We like them so much. I told people I was raised by a bunch of Canadians in drag because I was doing the lock and key kids stuff. My mom was working and I'd be entertained by the Kids in the Hall. So, you know, with them coming back, it's a definite nostalgia booster. Inject that shit straight into my veins. And I've watched the entire series, and they had a documentary called Comedy Punks, also on Amazon Prime. Nate, I was harassing you via text.
Mm.
Hey, have you seen this yet? What's going on? Because I want to talk about it.
Yeah, well, you know, it took me longer than I'd like to admit to finally check it out, because there's just so much to watch. But once I started watching it, truth be told, I haven't finished the season, but I did start it, and I've gotten deep enough to feel that nostalgia bone tickled,
that,
you know,
rush I was just talking about, that surge.
Dude, it was insane. Like, I don't, not to spoil anything, but just the opening, like, 5 minutes was enough to just get me so excited for the show. And yeah, it's great. You know, I mean, it is classic Kids in the Hall. We are obviously fans of Kids in the Hall. We've, you know, been known to use a sample from their movie Brain Candy in
our intro.
In some of our, intro.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. Not just some of anything. Basically, like, here we are, boom, we are ripping you off. But you know what? It's out of love. So it's that's okay. Right. So you don't get a red penny from us, but alas, you get our heart-warmed thanks. But yeah, it's I don't know. It's one of those things where we always talk about anticipation, right? Being the big thing. The main part of the event is waiting to get there. The excitement is palpable. And then when it finally arrives, you just mentioned there's some other things for you to watch. So poser, fraud, Nate. Oh my God. You're going to drop everything and watch the Kids in the Hall. What's the matter with you?
You know what's the matter with me is that I wasn't so super, super into their last outing, the Death Comes to Town miniseries.
Yeah.
So I just, it kind of colored my anticipation for this one. Ooh. So, but I will say I'm happy to have been proven wrong.
Okay. Well, let's get this out of the, you know, right out of the jump, let people know this is not a review. We're not reviewing the series. There is no giving grades on this or spoilers in the traditional sense. We don't want to do that because I do highly recommend that you definitely check it out on Amazon Prime because I want more seasons. I want to see more of this. I guess that in a way, that's a review itself, right? That's kind of like me just lying to everybody right now. This is not a review. By the way, watch it. It's great. Sorry.
This is not a review. By the way, it's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. So who's the fraud now, right? Me.
Yeah.
But I'll take it. Sorry. I don't care. I'll wear that freaking Scarlet F on my sweater. Walk around town. No big deal. But I do, what I want to bring up is that I do have one complaint. Can you believe it? I just fluffed that sucker up like nobody's business. I was just, oh my God, the kids in the hall. Yay, yay, woo, woo. And then I'm like, hey, but I want to shit on something.
That's all right. Nobody's perfect.
No. Nobody's nerfect or Poe Buddy's nerfect, right? Something like that. And for anybody who might consider this spoilery, maybe, earmuffs, I guess, because I'm not going to tell you exactly what happened, but rather I would like to discuss something that didn't happen. Would that still be under the spoiler, I don't know, guidelines, rules, something like that, as far as me, you know, being a prick or what?
It's like an omission spoiler.
Okay.
I think it's okay. You're in the clear.
All right. Well, you know, it's like everybody has expectations of something. If you watched Star Wars, you want to see a lightsaber battle between this person. And if you don't see the lightsaber, you don't see this character do their signature thing, you go, who the hell wrote this? Where's the fan service on this? Come on now. Right? So for me, it was the iconic character, Buddy Cole, played by Scott Thompson of the Kids in the Hall. Now, he does appear, of course. He's a fan favorite character, right? So, of course, Buddy Cole would have to be part of this whole revival. But where I was disappointed is because he doesn't do one of his signature monologues. You don't get that the entire series. So you see Buddy Cole is a nice little sketch with him. It's enjoyable, but you're like, okay, well, you know what? We didn't get that monologue this time. Maybe a couple episodes down the line here. Nope, nothing, zero, squat, nada. That's like saying, I went to go see Babe Ruth, but he didn't hit his home run. You go to see something for a desired effect, and I wanted that monologue.
Yeah. Like, I had gotten far enough in the series where I saw his appearance. So you've now spoiled for me that there won't be any more Buddy Cole to be had. But it's okay, because now I'm not waiting for it. You've probably saved my viewing experience, because I won't be just waiting for that. Yeah, for any listeners who aren't familiar with the Buddy Cole character or Kids in the Hall at all, Buddy Cole is a, you know, flamboyant, almost cartoonishly gay character that Scott Thompson would play. And his most of his sketches back on the old series were him just, doing a monologue, sitting there with a martini in his hand and dishing about stuff and just being, you know, just funny and nasty and just catty and super gay and super awesome.
Yeah.
and he makes an appearance in the new ones, but he doesn't do one of those monologues. So you don't get the full immersion into Buddy Cole land, but it was still a satisfying appearance, if you ask me.
No, it was. On the other hand, I think about Scott Thompson himself. Mm-hmm. He might have said, you know, this is my character. I don't want to do a monologue this time around. Fuck you. I do what I want with my own creation. You know what I mean? And this is what I wanted to do with it. And he's earned every right to do so. But sure. At the same time, I'm sure he must have known somewhere, like, they expect this of me, of this character. So am I legit and having my disappointment that we didn't get the Buddy Cole monologue? Am I just a selfish POS? Maybe. Maybe.
Yeah. You know? Who's to say?
Who's to say? Who's to say? Well, hopefully whoever is enjoying this fine episode is the person to say. They're sitting there right now going, yeah, Dave, you know what? That is very selfish and rude of you. Or they're saying, no, that's absolutely correct. You have every right to expect that type of performance. I don't know.
Mm.
If you haven't already checked out The Kids in the Hall, there is no better time than today, considering that every episode is streaming currently on Amazon Prime. And mind you, I am not getting paid to say that. Nope, not getting one red penny, but I just really recommend everybody check the series out. And then if you've already seen it, even better, go back and rewatch it and watch the new season, because I do, in fact, want Mo. I will say this, though, Nate, real quick.
Yeah.
Because I do want to get off The Kids in the Hall.
That's fine.
I want to get off on them. Leave them sticky. The first episode was very brave with some, some
spoilers, Dave.
Oh, no. Oh, okay. I'm not going to say anything else. Let's move on.
But you're right.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. See, now everybody wants to know what I'm talking about. So there you go. Go give Jeff Bezos your money and watch The Kids in the Hall. Yeah. So, Nate, you know, I am on the verge of my 44th birthday.
Wow, Mr. 44.
Mr. 44. And it's freaking me out, man. I don't
really? This one?
Yeah. I mean, everyone, I think, after 40. Everyone after 30. I go through these, like, little emotional crises. You know, every time I'm about to have a birthday, I'm on the verge. And I also do that thing where I've been saying I'm 44 for like the last 6 months, even though it's not my birthday yet. I project forward, which I probably shouldn't be doing because it just makes me, I don't know, more miserable about the whole damn thing. But I'm worried.
No, it's probably good. That's probably good. So
you
you're kind of,
I think it's healthy.
Yeah, you're getting yourself ready for 44, you know, getting yourself ready for that next year. You're like giving yourself some time to get into it and get used to it. See how it feels walking around in it, you know.
It's like a catcher's mitt, kind of oiling it up, putting some shoestrings around it, leaving it under the bed, getting it all worn and beaten. No, it's not even that. I don't know what the hell's the matter with me. I never have. I never will. Maybe by 45, I'll be able to assess my illnesses mentally here, why I got to do the things I do. But I was like, man, I don't know. I got to change something. Something is going to – I'm a fat bastard. Oh, I look in the mirror. I go, geez, you could shed like freaking 50 pounds, guy. What are you doing? And I've got these weird eating habits, some of which I picked up from my mother, who we used to joke in my family. She ate like a bird. But she wouldn't like eat all day. And then like in a random time, she would just, you know, have her meal. Me, sometimes I won't eat all day. But then right before bed or something, I eat that freaking big meal, man. Sitting in my belly. Not good. So.
Yeah, that's the worst time to do it. It's right before bed.
And I know better. I mean, but I still, it's just weird. Like, I feel like if I eat, I'm going to get tired. So some people, when they consume food, they actually, you know, get the thing called energy from it and go about their day. Me, I'm like, well, if I'm busy doing something, I eat, it's going to slow me down. And I wonder actually a little bit if this comes from my drinking days, because back when I used to be a heavy drinker, it was like, well, I can't eat right now. It's going to kill my buzz.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, man. It's probably related to that. And it's also probably a matter of the types of food you eat. Like some foods are obviously going to give you more energy and some are just going to weigh you down like a brick in your fucking stomach.
Yeah.
So,
well,
I don't know.
Being on brand with my life, my lifestyle, I'm just assuming some things are better than others. Like, I know processed food is bad. How? I don't know. I've heard it, so I believe it.
Yeah, sounds good.
Sounds good. That processed food, no good for you, man.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, you know, maybe I'm going to invest heavily, put some stock in breakfast cereal.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
As anyone would assume.
Yeah. Well, you know, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Yet another thing I've heard that I'd have no scientific basis to believe other than just, you know, you'd be around the water cooler. Hey, didn't you know breakfast was the most important meal of the day? That's right, Chet. But I was like, well, okay, well, let me look at some cereals. Fruity Pebbles? No. Captain Crunch peanut butter. No, that can't be good for my 44-year-old frame. Oh, look at this. Frosted mini wheats. Okay, that's good. I'll grab that. Oh, Raisin Bran. Yeah, I'm going to grab two scoops of this right here now, man. Okay. Sounds great, right? And you know, most people my age probably have been eating healthier for a long time. Me, I have no idea what I'm doing. I didn't even pick it up and look at the nutritional label. I said, well, mini wheat. Okay, good stuff.
Well, you're like, wheat is good for you, yeah. And I want to be more mini than I am right now.
There you right. There's the math that went on in my head with the monkey with the symbols. Yeah, that totally makes sense. And so, but listen, I'm committed, man. I'm in it. Oh. I'm not giving up. So
I don't know. I might read the label a little further, though. I don't know. No, you know, I'm sure frosted mini wheats are better than fruity pebbles.
Yeah.
But I don't know by how much, you know,
because
that the frosting is still kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, well, we're like, well, sugar, yeah, pure sugar. I'm still going to eat garbage, but at least it's a little less garbage-esque or garbage-ry or something, a little less crappy for you. Mm. And, you know, I'm just about to invent more words there around the word garbage. But, yeah, okay, so let's just cut to the chase here. I stuck with my guns and I started consuming the frosted mini wheats. They're good. I like them.
Yeah.
I think they're pretty tasty. You know what I mean? I enjoy them. It wasn't like a torture to switch over and eat those or even eat a bowl in the morning. Problem
they're
is
covered in sugar.
Well, one side, only know, one side. True. Okay.
That's true.
So you just flip it over and you're like, well, this is healthy shit. This is like kashi. Yep. This is what this is.
Yeah.
And,
Mueslix.
Yeah, right. The stuff that they really, yeah, that's the stuff that people like, that smell like patchouli eat right there.
Mm.
So, they got hacky sacks. And, all right. So tastes great. I mean, oh, look at, I'm doing so much good for my body. Look at me, man. I'm the new me. New year, new me. Welcome to 44. Oh my God. My intestines are working overtime. There is crisis going on somewhere in my belly. This guy is yelling at that guy. Someone's pulling some levers. Cranks are being turned. You are working overtime and not getting paid for it, young man. Dude, I was destroyed in the worst way.
Huh. Really?
Yeah. My bowels could not take the bran.
All that roughage, all that bran.
Yeah,
man.
Dude, I mean, you remember the old skit from SNL about colon blow.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
This was freaking legit. Like, I mean, I couldn't even control myself. I went to the park with my kid to play catch, and luckily the park is like right next to my house. And I was like, uh-oh, you hear that little gurgle?
Oh, yeah.
Something's happening. And I had to rush back home, and it was almost like if I didn't make it in time, something bad was going to happen, like publicly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, and I mean, I'm looking at the box after. I'm like, what is it? What is this disrupting my life? And it's saying that it's got a lot of fiber.
Yes.
A lot of fiber.
That's what bran is, yeah.
Well, I me being me, I have no idea the benefits or otherwise to fiber.
Mm.
I mean, so I didn't know if I ate a whole bowl of this, it might have some kind of side effect to that nature.
Yeah, well, that's what the reason older people usually eat that stuff is because they get constipated. It keeps your system moving. It scrapes out your colon, all that roughage, all that fiber. I think. I don't know. I'm not a doctor either. So
it's like swallowing a loofah.
Yeah, exactly. Imagine that mini wheat scrubbing the inside of your colon.
Oh,
and just kind of taking everything with it. Sounds awesome.
Yeah, I'd rather hire a maid. That's what I would prefer. Because they should put a warning on the box, like, don't eat a whole bowl of this for the uninitiated. Slow down.
Yeah.
Like, just try, like, two of them, please. Don't put any more than two in your bowl.
Ramp up to the
Yeah, exactly. The bowl. Right, yeah. Right. Like a fucking track runner doesn't just automatically like do a marathon or something. They do their sprints first and whatever training they do.
Yeah.
And I know I sound like the stupidest man in America, which I would be if it wasn't for the GOP. So thanks for making me smarter than I really am, because at least I'm not as dumb as you. But
thanks, Marjorie Taylor Greene.
There you go, right? Right. All I got is fiber underneath my belt. What's your excuse? Yep. So
she's got a gun.
So anyway, I it's been 2 days now and I'm still hurting. With my old man cereal is what I call it, because it seems like the responsible thing to eat.
Have you been still eating it like regularly?
Well, for 2 days. So for two mornings now.
All right.
I have consumed.
I didn't know if you meant it's 2 days later and I'm still hurting from that.
No. Well, I mean, kind of a little bit, you know, I'm not, that's the other thing they should put on the box. Like if you're not constipated, don't eat it. Like watch out.
Right.
Look out.
Yeah, you're not going to eat X-lax if you don't have to, if you're not constipated, right? You're not going to, you know, so, you know, this is, I assume, in that same
category. Thing, you know? Sure. It's like, don't be drinking Metamucil before a first date.
Yeah.
You know, is there something they should put? Yeah, I'm going to sue them. That's the American way. I'm going to be the guy, you know, fucking screw the woman who burned herself with a coffee at Mickey D's. I'm going to be the guy who sued Frosted Mini Wheats. Take that,
because
Kellogg's.
You're, you almost pooped yourself a couple times.
Yeah.
But not even really.
That's it. That's enough. That's my participation trophy. I nearly pooped myself. I'm going to go to court with that. You know, when they're dealing with murders and real crime, I'm going to clog up the judicial system. By saying, "Your Honor, I nearly shat my pants thanks to these Frosted Mini Wheats. Case closed." And go from there. But if anybody has any tips on what I should do for my health other than eating more processed crap, feel free to contact us. I would like to know. I really want to take someone's advice. But here's the other thing, too, is I don't like the whole concept of diets. Diets, like the, these crazy things like, oh, you can only eat what something in the size of the palm of your hand, or the keto diets and all this other stuff. Just give me something regular, like something any average human being can do without much sacrifice or effort. That's what I want.
You know, that doesn't seem like too much to ask.
No.
You know?
Selling.
I think everybody in America is looking for that same thing.
Well, you know, sellingoutshow@gmail.com. You let me know what I could do. Or just tell me what I could eat that's not like, I don't know. And you said everybody else is looking for it, but I mean.
I think if it were easy enough, if it were as easy as you're looking for, then I think more people would be successful with it, is what I'm saying.
Okay, all right. Let me clarify then, because I'm not looking to be like, I know I mentioned like I could use to lose 50 pounds, you fat ass. I get it. But maybe it's more for me just like, okay, well, what should I be doing to be a little bit healthier now? I understand. Jog, do some exercise, whatever. Give me maybe what do you eat? What do you do? I don't want to be, I don't know. I don't want to be on the – I'm not saying like I'm on The Biggest Loser or something, that TV show where there's a bunch of freaking, you know, humongous people trying to lose all these pounds. I'm just saying like I'm turning 44. I want to live a little bit longer maybe.
Yeah,
sure. So I can keep podcasting with you?
Well, there's – I mean, yes, it would be great. Somebody out there, if you have any suggestions, if you're maybe a nutritionist and you can give us some free advice so we don't have to pay you for
– yeah.
For the knowledge, then
that is,
you know,
key. And don't offer me anything with fruit. I don't eat fruit.
Well, that's okay, because fruit's a lot of sugar, actually.
Yeah.
Like I know a little bit, and fruit is actually a lot of people assume that fruit is a healthy thing, and sure, it's healthier than eating a candy bar. But honestly, if you're really trying to like lose weight and cut down your carbs and all that, like sugar, there's a lot of sugar in fruit. That's like, that's why fruit is sweet. You know, it's fucking all sugar.
Yeah.
But,
so fuck that fruit.
I don't know.
Fuck that fruit, man. No way. Jose. Goodbye, fruit. No, but I mean, I don't know. I was thinking, I'm glad you defended my decision to live a fruitless existence, because I was waiting, you know, thinking someone's going to be like, hey, yeah, you dummy. You're like, hey, anybody out there, tell me how I can live a better life and eat some simple things that might, you know, improve the longevity of my existence. And you're like, oh, but no fruit. How can I breathe better? But I don't like oxygen.
Mm.
I just don't. Just too
well, I think it's going to be a little more than switching to frosted mini wheats. You know,
it's a
I think that's what anyone's going to tell you.
It's a beginning. Everything is baby steps. Something has to start somewhere here, Nate.
Sure.
And
that's great.
I started with frosted mini wheats. I did get raisin bran too. I haven't cracked that open yet, but I don't like raisins.
Well, good, because raisins are all sugar too.
Fuck. Oh my God.
My mother, when I was a kid, I never ate raisins really as a kid, but my mother used to say, I would rather you have a chocolate bar than a raisin, because at least the chocolate bar melts and is out of your mouth. Like, the raisins just get stuck in your teeth and it's all sugar. Like, they're usually like sugar coated, especially when they're in raisin bran, but I don't know. I like raisin bran.
Yeah, I don't know.
The raisin bran's probably going to make you shit yourself even more, or at least as much, because bran is in the title.
Yeah, fiber, yeah, bran, so. I don't know.
Fiber, bran, fiber, colon blow.
Yeah, colon blow. That's it, baby. I don't know. I have no idea what I'm doing. But I'm going to be 44, so yeah.
All right.
That's enough about that, I guess. But, you know, I guess kind of keeping in the theme of being 44 years old is I've got to see a lot of things go away, be invented, then go away again. And one of those things that recently I'm kind of shocked that people are back into, and stop me if you heard this.
Okay.
Physical CDs.
Really?
Yeah, like the compact discs. I have gone to some bookstores and they have healthy CD sections, and I see people browsing them with enthusiastic eyes looking for some hits to listen to on apparently the CD player they must still own, because otherwise what good is a thing other than just a little shiny frisbee?
A coaster.
Yeah, a coaster, yeah. Right? And when I moved one time, I gave away all my CDs. I'm like, they're useless.
Yeah.
They're nothing. A waste of money, these friggin' CDs. But they're back, baby. They're back. So dead media be damned. CDs are making a comeback.
Oh, it was bound to happen, man. The LPs were coming back. Everyone's collecting vinyl again. And then cassettes, I even saw. It's like that the whole hipster crowd is just like, you know, oh, it's almost, I don't want to say kitschy, but like kind of trendy or whatever, funny to collect these old things. You know, it's like ironic or something. But I also think that it has to do with collecting. Like, people love listening to music, but I was always kind of a collector too with that stuff. Just like you have comic books. I mean, I collected CDs. I had hundreds of CDs. And I mean, I definitely think that there's something to holding a physical copy of something. I do understand that. It's just that after a while, it gets to be so much to move around. Yeah. They collect dust, you know, that they get scratched. Like, an MP3 is not going to get scratched, you know? So, I mean, I don't know. People talk about the quality being better on vinyl, for example, but vinyl scratches, vinyl gets fingerprints, vinyl, you know, it's imperfect.
Yeah.
But,
well, you know, I understand the collectability of it, because there are a couple CDs now I kind of wish I did have back, just for I like the albums that much.
Yeah.
I almost want to like frame them like you would with a record or something, because it's just like, wow, that brings me a lot of joy. Even though I have a little plastic disc on my desk that I can just tell it to play the same songs whenever I want, and I get the same quality, and it's on demand, man, you know, so.
Sure.
But one of those albums for me would be David Bowie Earthling.
Oh, yeah.
I love that album. I am unapologetic with how much I think that's one of his best records.
I'm inclined to agree.
See, you're one of the rare few. There's so many other people who would be like, out of the whole David Bowie catalog, how could you say or even pick Earthling to be even like a top five? And for me, it's just a lot of electronica going on there. So it's a little, divergent than some of his classic material. But, you know, back in the 90s, he was doing a lot of experimenting and successfully.
Yep.
But Earthling to me is just great. And I mean, do I have a CD player? My wife has one in her car. I probably would not be like, hey, let's listen to Earthling, because she doesn't care for it. So what would I do with it? I would just have it on a shelf and be like, that's a great album that I ask my little smart disc to play for me rather than listen to this one.
Yeah.
You know what I
mean? But at least you got the artwork and the whole, I don't know, yeah, the collectible thing.
The linear notes.
Yeah, I think Earthling and the album before it, Outside, were both a couple of his greatest albums. I mean, it's a lot different than all the 70s material and, I mean, of course, the 80s material. It's that 90s era, but he was doing some, like, dark stuff, and it was, yeah, really experimental electronically. He was very up to date with, like, state of the art with the music technology. He's always been pretty good about that, like trying out new styles of music or trying out new technology for making music. Hell, Earthling wasn't one of the songs on that, like the first ever MP3 available online, or the first ever song released online. Was it Telling Lies? Was
I believe it was, as a matter of fact. Yeah. So it's like, man, totally cracking the door open on that. Hello, Napster. Yeah. You can thank David Bowie. It's funny because anybody under a certain age would probably be like, what the hell is Napster?
Yeah, what is that?
What is that? Oh, my God. Like, there's a generation I used to be like, oh, yeah, we used to roll down the Blockbuster. What's that? But still, to see people like going through CDs like it's 1995 again to me, I'm like, wow, this is great. But also a little terrifying. I don't know what to make of it, you know?
It's weird. I think that another factor that we're kind of overlooking when we're talking about how we wish we had held on to our CDs is that I've seen a lot of talk online about how much old copies of certain albums go for that are out of print.
Yeah.
Like a lot of them are worth a ton of money, and there's a lot of them that I'm kicking myself for getting rid of. I mean, I had most of, for example, like Skinny Puppy, my favorite band, I had most of their catalog, singles, EPs, full albums, like something like 29 discs, I think I had somewhere around there between 20 and 30. And I mean, a lot of those, it turns out, are worth a lot of money now, and I don't know where the hell most of my shit is, so.
But the CDs, that's like anything, have collectability to the point where they're actually worth something.
Yeah, some that's of them nuts. Do. And I mean, yeah, like, you figure the discs get scratched or whatever. I was never good at keeping them pristine. I don't know if they have to be in order to be. I'm sure the price goes up if they are, but I think even just having the packaging and the whole thing is like just worth money just as a piece for a lot of these.
Well, I mean, records. When you think of it, like relating it to comic books, why are comic books worth anything? Well, first, someone needs to want it, right? There's going to be demand for it. But the other thing too is a lot of people were buying things in the 90s, automatically protecting them and saying, okay, well, I got these. I'm investing in this. And that's what this is. I'm speculating this will be worth something in a certain amount of time, so I'm going to protect it wholeheartedly. Well, guess what? The comics that first came out in the 30s, 40s, 50s, kids were rolling them up, put them in their back pocket. So it's really difficult to find any in good condition whatsoever.
Yeah.
Right? But now when we're talking about CDs, I'm thinking these things were mass produced, but yet again, because it was or is, I mean, technically, dead media, a lot of people just chucked them away, or they sat in a basement, or they got damaged from mold, or, you know, whatever the case may be here. But the big difference, I think, is while comics, right, there's a lot of reprints out there, you can still read the stories. Yet again, with the music, It's just like, I don't know, there's not an exclusivity to it, maybe?
Right. Right, because you can find it elsewhere, you know?
Yeah, and it's not the original, it's not the first print, it's not this format of it. But the purity, the rawness of it is still just the music itself. So maybe, I don't know. But yet again, it's almost like a book, right? A regular book. Geez, I want the first print of this. I can't have the second or third print. I need the original because whatever, it's rare. It's unique. Yeah. So, yeah.
Right.
But the CDs, man, I don't know. It's just, there you go.
That's strange.
Hold on to them, people. If you still got them, you could probably make some money off of them. Not even talking about eBay or something. Just go down to your used bookshop or something else and be like, hey, man, you sell CDs? I got these. And you never know.
You never know. I think you'd be better off, like with most things going online, but yeah, you never know. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I did a lot of, like selling old CDs and you know, shamefully also some stolen merchandise and things when I was using. And I remember it would be like, oh, some discs you'd get in the beginning, it was like, you'd get $5 for a used CD. And then eventually it was like, oh, I'll give you a dollar for like three CDs. Yeah. You know, they just went down in value. But now here they are. They're fluctuating back up again. And again, certain limited edition records or import, you know, we used to have like import versions of certain albums.
Yeah. And
I was thinking about some of those like old Mike Patton projects, like the Weird Little Boy CD that had like an interesting package and everything. Like a lot of these, for example, but a lot of these discs that, you know, some of them had special packaging that were unique and, you know, it wasn't just the basic jewel case. And yeah, certain things I'm sure are worth more than other things now, but we did not have the foresight or the probably the space or desire to tote the shit around.
Says, this is coming from a guy right now. I have a box of VHS tapes over here.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I don't watch VHS anymore, but I can't bear to throw them away. And I can't imagine they're worth much money, but you never know. Look at that. This copy of Major League.
Ooh.
There you go. The Charlie Sheen vehicle.
With Corbin Burnson.
And Tom Berenger. Yes, indeed. So this one was labeled for sale for 29 cents.
Ooh.
But now it could be worth a cool mill. If anybody wants to buy it, I'll sell it to you right now for $1 million. I will autograph it for you and everything.
Just mention it when you write in about serial advice.
Well, if you right down here, I happen to have a copy of a hit film that has recently gotten a sequel after 35 years, I believe. This is Top Gun.
Ooh,
but
yeah.
A lot of people don't know this is actually from Tina Yuther's private collection.
Oh, really?
Thereby increasing the value wholeheartedly. For those who don't remember, Tina Yuther's was the actress, the little sister on Family Ties.
That's right.
So there you go. This totally is jacked up on the price. And then Tina Yuther's actually, interestingly enough, to bring her up now, did you think she was a hottie or what? You want to pound that?
No. She was like 11 on that show.
Oh, yeah. I guess it's kind of creepy. Oh, no. What have I done?
No, man. But I mean, I was probably even younger.
Yeah.
So I at the time, I never found her
attractive,
particularly attractive. But a lot of those TV shows, like, it was a different level of star power back then. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't just hire people on looks alone back then. It seemed like you see a lot of kind of ugly stars back then.
Okay. Well, I mean, I totally came out of the gate the wrong way, been like, hey, you want to pound Tina Yuther's, huh? I wasn't even
You remember Michael J. Fox's little sister on that first sitcom he was on?
Yeah.
Wasn't she hot?
Yeah. I know. That's terrible. Because I really should have been like, oh, yeah. Didn't you think she was an attractive actress or something? But no, I'm like, you want to hit that? You want to get knee deep up in that shit now, do you? But I mean,
that's all right, man.
You know, you say like actors back in the 80s didn't necessarily have to be attractive.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know if it's like the rose tinted glasses or something, but I mean, looks still counted in the 80s.
Sure.
For the most part, you would think, but then you do start thinking about these, some of these sitcoms and you go, geez, that actress looked a little busted up. Like nowadays, no matter how good her chops were, acting ability, would they have hired her, knowing that she kind of has the average girl face that's nothing unique. Or about it, or nothing that says, oh, ooh la la.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, look at her.
I know. Well, you figure, even on Family Ties, you figure the other kids, like Michael J. Fox wasn't a bad looking guy, and Justine Bateman, the other sister, was hot. I mean, you know, now am I creepy? How old was she on that show?
Yeah, you are creepy. Yeah. You've always been creepy, though, so it's okay.
That's right. Justine Bateman will always be pretty hot. I don't know if that's true. Don't quote me on that. I haven't seen what she looks like lately, but she stayed hot for a while.
Yeah. Watch out for her boyfriend, Nick.
Oh, that's right.
I make art out of garbage.
Yeah. He was an artist, man. He had a dangly earring.
Yeah. That's pretty. It's like the Lost Boys. That's what he was rocking that style. And I'm sorry, Tina Yuther's, if you're out there, I didn't mean to be like, oh yeah, you're fugly. You know what I mean?
Sorry, Teeny Others.
I'm sorry, Teeny Others. I'm sorry. But you know, I mean, this being the Top Gun from your personal collection, you did come up and I'm sorry. I just don't get it. I don't get it.
I still don't know how you ended up with that tape.
Well, you know, here's the other thing too. Like Teen Beat magazine, all that stuff that existed probably in like 1984. She must have had like a pinup, like not like in a bikini or nothing.
That's the saddest pinup. Teeny Others pinup.
But like her hair all teased up. It's like her sitting on a couch or something. But like the Teeny Others expose, and someone cut it out and slapped it on their wall next to their Bon Jovi poster or something. Like, I think Teeny Others is so hot because she's like natural. She reminds me of my babysitter. I don't know.
Yeah.
Poor Teeny Others.
Poor Teeny Others, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think now. Like, I guess the child stars back then, they were of a higher caliber than Teeny Others. I don't know. What is up with her?
Well,
man?
That's the other thing, too. If you think like the facts of life, you had Blair, who is like, you know, come on, bombshell blonde.
Right.
And then you had Natalie.
Oh, Mindy Cohn.
Yeah. Yes. But she was like supposed to be this tomboy. I mean, she was a lesbian.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even need to like revisit any of her dates.
No, Joe was the lesbian.
Oh, they're both lesbians.
Oh, okay. They were together.
They were hanging out together. They were freaking flicking the beans. That's what they were doing. No, but you're right.
Scissoring.
Scissoring. You're right. You're right. Joe was a lesbian. But okay, Natalie, I could have been.
Yeah, probably. I mean, who knows?
Because she was just like, what was up with her? She definitely...
In my mind, she was.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, but like, she wasn't a looker.
Yeah.
But she was making bank. She was bringing home fucking bacon, baby. Because she was on the facts of life.
Whose dick was Mindy Cohn and Teeny Others sucking?
What?
To get that job.
What?
To get those jobs.
Yeah.
There was some Harvey Weinstein shit going on back then with those underage actresses.
Sherwood Schwartz. Let's look up the executive producers of said shows. And they were like, yeah, you want the role? But now we're getting even creepier because they were like kids when they first started.
I know. I feel really dirty.
Well, there you go. There's a reason why we never saw them again after those shows ended, because there weren't fucking enough dicks to suck in the world to get them fugly broads a fucking gig. That was a problem. Man.
Wow.
Oh, I'm terrible. Guys, you know I'm kidding. You know I respect everybody, but I mean, this is a locker room talk now, I guess.
I think we're in a gray area because we were younger than these characters on these shows, than these actresses when we were young. So they will perpetually be older than us.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, well, I guess that's how time works. If someone's older than you, they will always be older than you.
That makes sense.
Yes, that checks out.
Yeah.
But I don't know, but so somehow it's okay that we're saying these things about Teeny Others.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like saying, well, you would totally have fucking nailed Judy Garland, wouldn't you? And you're like, well, geez, in The Wizard of Oz, she was like fucking 13, dude. What's the matter with you?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
It's messed up.
She would
have been hitting one of them flying monkeys.
Oh, jeez.
That's kinky shit.
We gotta say something bad about some child actors. Oliver from the Brady Bunch. Yeah, you totally smash it. Come on, that fucking jinx.
Yeah.
Good for nothing. Jeez Louise. But anyway, let's get away from this as far as we can. Let's run away. Oh, Lord. Hey, you know, Nate, I got something here in my pocket I want to show you.
Oh, man. I fell for that before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Look at this thing. I can't believe this was in my pocket.
What is it?
Can you see it?
Holy shit. A wagon wheel.
Yeah, I got a wagon wheel with the cream in the middle there. What do you call these things? Like a peanut butter sandwich?
That's like a
Ritz Bits cracker.
It's like a sandwich cracker, a Ritz Bits. It's some kind of a cracker with cream in the middle.
You know what I'll do? Yeah, I'm going to post this on Instagram so people can see it. So if you follow Selling Out Show on Instagram, I will. This will be out on our whatever feed or page or whatever when the show is released. But yeah, look at that. It's in my pocket.
That's gorgeous. Is it real? Is it in your pocket just floating around?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question right there, Nate. Is it real? No, it's not. It's an eraser.
Get the fuck out of here.
Seriously. It's a fucking pencil eraser. So
that
looks as real can be, right?
It does.
You could probably take a bite out of that right now.
I would have thought it was real, except that I know you, and I know that your germophobia would never let you keep a loose cookie in your pocket.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't happen very often, no. Yeah. But here's the thing, right? This got me thinking. I see this on my kitchen table, like, oh my God, look at the how authentic this thing looks. It looks literally like a little cracker. This is unbelievable. And I picked it up, and that's when it dawned on me, it's an eraser. So I go, could you imagine? All right. A bunch of kids decide this looks tasty. I'm going to eat it.
Right.
Now, if 1,000 children of color decided to eat this eraser, it's no problem. No big deal. You know, dummies, you fucking morons, you're letting your kids eat fucking erasers. Your kids are as stupid as you are. But what if one blonde-haired white child ate this or tried to eat this and choked on it? What do you think would happen?
You know, they'd probably stop selling them.
Yeah, there'd probably be a ban on erasers that look like food or anything edible. You know, there'd probably be some dude out there, some politician. Oh, how dare my child be exposed to this eraser that looks like a Ritz Bits cracker? Look at it. It literally looks like a real Ritz Bits. Who can resist a Ritz Bits? You know what I mean?
You know, I like to have more faith in humanity than what you're talking about. But then I remember that you live in Texas.
Yeah.
I always forget.
So I guess the point of this exercise is ban fucking assault rifles. Yeah. So that's all I had to say about that. But yeah. So we were going to do a little exercise here where we're going to name every ice cream flavor on the earth, but we realized, or at least I realized, that that'd be impossible to do before we died of old age. So in lieu of naming that, and I'm sorry to all the ice cream enthusiasts out there. I'm sure there's plenty of them. There must be ice cream fan clubs. The Baskin-Robbins boys. Maybe they're a gang. That's
not even to bring up sherbet and gelato.
Sherbet. You got some sherbet. Gelato. Frozen yogurt.
Come on, man.
Possibilities are endless here. Yeah. I would like to take a moment of our time to thank the partners of our program, if that's okay with you, Nate.
I would love that.
You cool with that? Yeah, I'll actually leave this little this fucking eraser of doom right here, this lethal fucking knick-knack tchotchke. Could you actually call an eraser a tchotchke? Because it actually has a purpose. Tchotchkes tend not to.
It's a knick-knack. It's a tchotchke. It's bric-a-brac.
Oh, yeah.
One of those things.
One of those. Something. One of those friggin' things. Say whatever word you want for it. But listen, I am a vapor. I love to vape. I'm about to vape my fucking brains out during the Nate's Notes segment.
Awesome.
And there's only one brand of e-liquid that I enjoy, and that is provided by NorthlandVapor.com. Now, Northland has some brick-and-mortar retail locations that you can, you're more than welcome to go visit if that's your thing. But guess what? They got a website, northlandvapor.com. So you can go there for all their awesome e-liquids among some other vaping products that are sure to come in handy. I love Northland Vapor. Please take my advice on this. We also have alpinehemp.com. CBD, baby. It's here. It's here to stay. I mean, so many people are realizing the benefits of CBD in their lives, all the various ways that it can, in fact, help them from relaxation to stress relief and, geez, just about everything you can think of. Now, Alpine Hemp even has pet-friendly products. That's right, pet-friendly products, so your pup can enjoy the benefits of CBD as well. Now, they can be found alpinehemp.com. At both sites, northlandvapor.com and alpinehemp.com, you can save 19% off your entire order by using code SELLINGOUT19. Now, that's not all, folks. They also have some other companies underneath their banner. If you're into the Delta line of products, you can check out deathbygummybears.com and wonkyweeds.com for Delta gummies. I mean, they got the Delta 8, the Delta 10, the Mississippi Delta. It's all there, baby. So don't miss out on that. Last but not least, I do want to thank Spunk Lube. Oh boy, the Spunk Lube. I use it on a regular basis. You want to know why?
Why?
Because it makes life easier, baby. Especially when you're trying to get down and dirty with your old lady. Slip and slide. Summer's here. Get that slip and slide out. Spunk Lube is an award-winning lubricant used by professionals in the adult film industry, but why let them have all the fun? Right now, you can go on spunklube.com and have it shipped directly and discreetly to your door. Try Spunk Lube today, and you can thank me later. Now, off to a segment of the show that we like to call It's Nate's Notes.
Dust off your LPs. It's time for Nate's Notes.
I was going to base this edition of Nate's Notes on a recent loss we endured in the world of metal. Trevor Sternad, vocalist and darkly imaginative lyricist from the band The Black Dahlia Murder, recently took his own life. It came as a huge shock to anyone who'd met the guy at a show or even just watched one of his invariably warm and funny interviews. Trevor always seemed like an affable stoner, an unapologetic nerd, and most of all, a lover of all things music. He wrote songs based on everything from classic horror tropes like werewolves and zombies to direct references to 8-bit Nintendo games like the old Castlevania series. His suicide shocked everyone, though watching some of his pandemic-era Zoom interviews now, one can see hints that only seem like red flags in retrospect. I mean, we all have been dealing with the isolation and depression of a multi-year quarantine. I guess you just never know who's closest to that edge until it's too late. Please be patient with each other, my friends. We are all on shaky ground as we dig ourselves out of this socially distant clusterfuck. Anyway, as much as I wanted to mention Trevor, whose death really fucking blindsided me and hit me harder than I would have thought, I figure I won't torture you all with a whole segment about such a bummer of a topic. So let's talk about a band who is mostly known for being the opposite of depressing and dark. The Red Hot Chili Peppers. When I was a kid, I remember the single Higher Ground coming out. And for years, I had no idea it was a Stevie Wonder song. I just loved the brightly colored video and their bass player's pants, which were covered with plush toys and teddy bears. The song was great too, still is. A few years later, when I was probably 11, they released their classic album, Blood Sugar Sex Magik. Singles like Give It Away, Under the Bridge, and Breaking the Girl were all over the radio. And my friend got the cassette, which we would listen to constantly. The record's predominant feature to a kid so young was the vulgarity of the lyrics on many of the songs. Anthony Kiedis wrote a few tracks that were almost as explicit as a Penthouse Forums letter, and I remember feeling like I was getting away with something whenever I'd listen to a song like Sir Psycho Sexy. As an adult, and someone who has consumed hundreds of records since then, I realize, upon revisiting Blood Sugar Sex Magik, that those lyrics, memorable as they are, just act as lurid yet sometimes clever graffiti over the framework of some really memorable songs. That album is truly well written, with every member firing on all cylinders. There's a great documentary called Funky Monks about the making of that album. They basically just sequestered themselves in this big house that they converted into a studio. Since they were all living there, they could just write and record at all hours of the day or night. They could capture any random idea at the moment of conception and not worry about any time constraints. It was a pretty ideal scenario for an energetic young band at their creative peak. They were at the top of their game back in 1991 while making Blood Sugar Sex Magik. And in the 30 years since, that's sadly just been proven over and over again. For a while, I thought that maybe I'd just gotten too old for the Chili Peppers. Their funkiness and Anthony's sing-song pseudo-rapping vocals are definitely suited to younger listeners, with whom I no longer include myself. But again, re-listening to earlier stuff like the Mother's Milk record and the aforementioned Blood Sugar Sex Magik, I can definitely say that it's not just the age of this one listener. The Peppers went through a lot of changes after that era in the early 90s. Without going into their whole bio, their guitarist, John Frusciante, had a lot of mental health and addiction issues, which led him to leave the band in 1992. The Chili's went through a few guitarists trying to find a replacement, including Dave Navarro of Jane's Addiction fame. Eventually, a newly sober and clear-headed Frusciante returned to the fold in 1998. I remember being so happy to hear him back with the band when Californication was released the next year. Now, there are a few great tracks on that record, and it certainly brought the band more success than ever. I believe Californication was their best-selling album overall. But it marked a change in direction, musically, that seemed to chart a path they've stayed on ever since. Where Blood Sugar had strange percussive experimentation and truly lush arrangements, Californication began this era of simpler, single-note plucking by Frusciante, and a more sentimental, melodic vocal style by Kiedis, who really doesn't have a great singing voice. The rhythm section can rarely be criticized, but even a lot of the grooves kicked out by Flea and Chad Smith have seemed kind of repetitive and uninspired to me these last couple decades. Listen to the song Danny California from 2006's Stadium Arcadium album for a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Compare that song to something like Breaking the Girl from Blood Sugar Sex Magik, and tell me there hasn't been a drop in quality. But Nate, the Chili Peppers are going strong. They draw huge numbers. How can you say this? Well, mass appeal rarely equates to good writing. Catchiness may be cool, but it doesn't always satisfy the listener, especially when there's evidence of greatness elsewhere in their catalog. I know I'm being a hater, and I'm sure there's at least some element of nostalgia flavoring my perspective. I have a lot of good memories that involve listening to those early 90s records, but I really don't think the Chili's have come close to the heights they hit on Blood Sugar Sex Magik, or even the previous album, Mother's Milk, ever since. I need to specify that I have not yet listened to the brand new record, Unlimited Love. Maybe I'll be surprised. I heard a single off it called Black Summer, which made me think of Danzig's old song, Dirty Black Summer. And there was a respectable guitar solo from Frusciante, who's back again after another split from the band, by the way, during which the Chili's released two albums with this dude Josh Klinghoffer on guitar. But as decent as the solo is on the new single, John Frusciante mostly falls back on the same low-effort, single-note melody trick, and Kiedis is his usual mediocre self. I don't know. I'm starting to think maybe I only liked Kiedis back then because I was young and he wrote naughty, sexy lyrics. Anyway, I'll try to give the new album a shot. It's really not fair to pass judgment on a band without hearing what they're writing now. I guess I probably should have done that before I wrote this whole thing. It could end up changing my whole perspective on this band. But I seriously doubt it. I think I'm just chillied out. So, Dave, I just don't know if I'm getting old or if I just have noticed the Chili's seem like they're kind of phoning it in the last fucking 30 years.
Yeah, well, I can definitely identify why you enjoyed the earlier 90s material.
Yeah.
Anthony Kiedis was a beefcake.
That's it. Maybe that's
him running shirtless down a beach, the hair flowing, bouncing. Oh, yeah. No, I can't agree with you more. I mean, if someone was to say to me, Dave, name some of the best albums of all time, Blood Sugar Sex Magik would definitely be on that list. But, geez, the quality fell off. Well, you mentioned Californication was okay, so it didn't exactly, like, yeah, get pushed off a cliff, but it hasn't been good lately at all. Yeah. I mean, I can't even listen to the Chili Peppers now. If someone's like, hey, you want to listen to the new record? I'd be like, nope, No, thank you. Not interested. Not even one bit. Because Anthony Kiedis, I mean, to me, that's number one. He can't sing.
Okay.
Okay. He's going to scat his way, or try to scat his way into your heart with some silly, ridiculous lyrics that make no sense, which even, to itself, I don't have a problem with, but it's just become, a shtick.
I know.
Absolutely, man.
That anybody could make fun of and just kind of like satire the whole thing and be like, you'd hear a satire and think it was legitimately the Chili Peppers.
It's true.
So that's sad.
I'm glad kind of to hear this as, I don't know, as much as we're critiquing this band, it makes me kind of happy to hear you say that. Cause when I was writing this, I wasn't sure if you were going to be like, what, you know, cause I know when Californication came out, you and I were both super. We were roommates at the time, and it was and it was such an awesome thing to hear that John Frusciante was back with the band. If you remember, that was like the big news,
right?
And I mean, the first single came out, Scar Tissue, and it was melodic and it's pretty and it's cool and there's a few cool songs on that album, but it's just kind of like if you listen to anything pre that album, well, except for the One Hot Minute album, which was the one I mentioned, Dave Navarro from Jane's Addiction was the guitarist on. Like, that album's kind of like its own thing. It's just doesn't sound like any of the other Chili Peppers.
I like that album.
Albums. I think it's pretty good myself. Or, you know, a handful of songs I really like on it, but, you know, some of it's all right. But as far as like Frusciante, I'm like, what the hell? Like, Frusciante, John Frusciante was such a unique guitarist. Like, to anyone who's not familiar, the Chili Peppers started with this guy, Hillel Slovak, playing guitar. And then there was another guitarist named Jack Sherman, who actually played on the first Chili Peppers record because Hillel Slovak was doing another project at the time. Whatever. Hillel Slovak was the founding guitarist of the band. And then after a couple albums, he overdosed on heroin and died. And they were trying to fill his spot. And when the Mother's Milk album, that was the first album to come out with this new guitarist, John Frusciante. And he was the young guy in the band. He was this kind of wunderkind, you know, super talented, almost Hendrix style guitarist. If you listen to that early shit, man, that guy wails on the guitar. He's so unique. He does. He sounds like a funkier Hendrix almost. And I don't know, man, like somewhere the thing is, right when he left, right after Blood Sugar Sex Magik, he himself got way into heroin.
Yeah.
And if you remember, there's like, remember, you could still go watch him. There's footage you can see of John Frusciante kind of aimless after leaving the Chili Peppers. And he's like about 100 pounds soaking wet. He looks like all his teeth are rotted out of his head. He's like half conscious being interviewed by some like French news magazine or newspaper or something. And he's showing this reporter some new material he's working on his acoustic. And it's like incoherent. Mm. He sounds just like a mess. And at the time I was like, man, that dude is just, he's gone. He's about to die. And it's great news that John Frusciante did not die. And it's great news that he got back with his old band. But it just seems like, he's just kind of coasting along. If you listen to the old shit and you listen, you know what? It ties back to my Nate's notes from the last episode about that guy was better before he got sober.
Yeah.
I hate to say it.
Earlier in this one, we talked about David Bowie and how he changed style. Everybody knows he was like a musical chameleon. But yet, despite all that, I mean, some people could slander his early 80s stuff because that's where he really hit the big time, Let's Dance, and say he was a sellout. You know, okay, whatever.
Modern Love.
Hey, but that happens to everybody, right? The Chili Peppers even, okay? If you look at the progression of the music that they made over the years when they were like more rough, more punk rock than funky, and, you know, George Clinton was one of their producers, and then as time went on, was his name? Oh, Rick Rubin was the one behind Blood Sugar Sex Magik, and it was more polished and experimental, and like the evolution of sound, of their sound. Yet, when they did hit that success, they're like, okay, well, this is what we're doing well. This is what we're getting paid for. Let's not change it.
Right.
Let's keep this going. And as you had just mentioned, for 30 whatever fucking years.
Yeah.
Okay. So, geez, man, it's like one thing to sell out, right? We all kind of aspire to it in a way because get paid. But at the same time, it's like, all right, man, that well is fucking dry. It's drier than dry. That well is drier than a nun's twat on Sunday. Okay.
Right.
And at this point too, they could just hang it up.
Yeah.
And still be rich and still be well known and still be famous. And hey, you know, Anthony Kiedis, geez, your story is something else. I mean, his life story is unbelievable.
Sure. He's got a book.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. But
it's called Scar Tissue.
There you go. Biggity bam, biggity boom. But I don't know, man. So you're like, well, are you still doing it because of the passion of it? Do you owe alimony? What's going on here? Because it's not interesting anymore. It's not good. It's like, how many times do we have to hear, rock this city, ka-da-ba-da-ba-do-bay. Okay, we got that in 1994, 1992. We get it. And then, like, you're mellow, but you can't sing. You got zero vocal chops whatsoever. None. Zero. And the fact that you've made it this far without that natural talent is the ultimate lottery ticket of lottery tickets.
Mm.
You know? So, ultimately, okay, you can respect where they came from, what they did, what they achieved. But God, do you lose respect when they're still bringing that fucking, they're dragging that dead horse out, baby. And they're just fucking spanking it.
It's true. I feel like they rewrote Californication like 4 or 5 times now.
Wow.
That from then on, you know, basically it's like, I don't know. And it's, do you know what I'm saying about that single note stuff where it's like that song can't stop, but dig to do the read through, but the guitar is just like that. Bang, bang. Bang, 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 bang. And it's just like one note. And, it's like the exact opposite of what Frusciante used to do. And don't get me wrong. Like Flea, their bassist Flea is a legend. I mean, he's listening back now that I'm a little older and know a little more and I've listened to other bassists. Like I can see that Flea is, I don't want to call him a one trick pony, but he kind of does one thing and he does it really fucking well. He's really good at that slap bass that, you know, you hear it in pretty much all their music. but it's even he and Chad Smith on the drums are getting a little, it sounds a little tired, guys, you know?
Flea, you know, him and Anthony Kiedis were in the movie The Chase.
Oh, true.
And then Flea was in Back to the Future 2 and 3. And now Flea, and as he's credited as Flea, so God bless him for never adjusting his moniker with age.
From Michael Balzer.
Yeah, he's on Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah. So Flea is...
He was in the Butthole Surfers Who Was In My Room Last Night video.
Oh, there you go. Right. So he's been around. I mean, but everybody knows the legendary stories, socks in their cocks and fucking Flea pouring crazy glue into an open wound on his thumb so he can continue to slap the bass.
Yeah,
you know, but God.
Yeah, they are legends, but they're what happens when one of those bands that were so exciting and young and just legends in their youth just doesn't burn out. You know, they're one of those bands like, you know, sometimes you get bummed out. You're like, damn, I wish Nirvana was still around, or I wish. And I know that sounds super morbid, but it's like sometimes you're like, yeah, what are the Chili Peppers still doing around?
Yeah, well, exactly. But yet, you don't want it to. You don't want them to die. You just
I'm tired. Glad they
enjoy all that moolah, all that cheddar, and go sit in your mansion and, you know, fucking get with your models in the hot tub. Do that instead. You know, yes. Yeah, but you couldn't pay me. Well, maybe you could, but I wouldn't enjoy.
Yeah, you could pay me. Yeah.
To listen to a new Chili Peppers album, I it's a hard pass for me.
Yeah.
So tables have turned. Yeah. They've spun around like the head in The Exorcist. Pea soup everywhere.
Well, as sad as I am about the Chili Peppers, I'm glad you and I agree on this.
Yeah. No, thank you.
I wasn't sure. Yeah.
No, thank you. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. But they must still have a rabid fan base as well. And I wonder if we could ever find – I would love to do this, actually. Find, like, a staunch Red Hot Chili Peppers supporter and have them on the show to defend their favorite band and their progression over the years and kind of duel it out with us, put on their gloves and throw down.
The challenge is out there, folks.
Gauntlet. There you go.
That's right.
Right there. You want to do it. You want to defend the RHCP, then come do it with me. Which, yeah, that could be a lyric for Anthony Kiedis right there.
Yeah.
Scat that, Anthony.
Scat it up.
Scat it up. You know, real quick, just on this as well, is I think about some of the bands like Aerosmith.
Mm-hmm.
If a new Aerosmith record came out, like, who's going to be like, oh, yeah, they got a new sound, man. They got something new going on. They're not going to do it. It just ain't going to happen.
That's right.
And then you got the other guys who, like Bon Jovi, I think, in the early 00s released some music that were like, oh, well, we're going to add, some more 90s elements or something. Of course, 5 years too late to our sound. We're going to add some industrial to Bon Jovi. Yeah. And it just doesn't work because at that point, it's over, man, because they weren't known for being creative and innovative in any way anyway.
Right. Exactly.
Anyway.
They're like a bubblegum 80s band, you know? Yeah. So, but yeah, Chili Peppers were fresh and exciting, but again, they're kind of... But they're not even, again, I use the term one-trick ponies. They're one-trick ponies, but the trick they're doing nowadays isn't the same trick they did when they were kids, you know? Which I guess makes sense. They're not kids anymore, but that was the Chili's we liked, guys.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know. I can listen to Blood Sugar Sex Magik just because of its sonic experimentation in certain parts and the cool guitar lines, and they do some cool chord changes and stuff. But honestly, with some of the lyrics and some of the Chili's music, I feel a little weird listening to it past like 25.
Well, you know, Red Hot Chili Peppers are Tina Yuther's favorite band.
Oh,
so
shit.
There you go, pot calling the kettle black.
My bad.
You're like, those lyrics are gross. Disgusting. Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. I mean, back then it was totally appropriate. Yeah. And now it's like, oh, dude, I feel dirty. I need a shower. No, I mean, none of that bothers me.
Yeah. I hope old-ass Anthony Kiedis is not singing Sir Psycho Sexy on stage at 60 or whatever.
Oh, please do. You bring it. You bring that fucking shit. If I paid to come see you, I want Sir Psycho Sexy via wheelchair. You fucking Phil Collins, that shit motherfucker. Get up there and belt it out. I don't give a fuck. But anyway, I digress or something like that, whatever people say when they're trying to change the topic, because I don't want to talk about the Red Hot Chili Peppers anymore. I just don't. Because they stink.
Yep.
They suck. Anyway, what do you got planned on going on for the rest of the day now? Because we're about to leave. If you guys couldn't tell, I'm doing like the whole slow mosey to the door.
Anyway.
Yeah, so, you know.
So, anyway.
This is how professionals end a podcast. They just kind of hem and haw until we're out. But you got anything good going on? What, you fucking jumping out of a cake, getting shot out of a cannon?
If the night goes well.
Yeah.
I don't know. Probably just get something to eat and... crash.
Yeah.
It's a little later here. It's like six. I'm old, man.
Yeah. There you go.
Get a bite to eat, watch a Kids in the Hall episode.
That's a good call idea. Back. Yeah. Yep. Call back, right? Yeah. Fucking man. That's good stuff, man. Watch it and watch that documentary, Comedy Punks. It's very good.
I didn't even know that was part of it. I didn't know that was out. So
that's out. And then there's also another good documentary on George Carlin via HBO Max.
I heard. I haven't seen that yet either. Man, I got so much to watch.
There you go. So everybody out there, thank you for listening to the show. But now I've given you a laundry list. You can watch Stranger Things 4.
Oh, man.
That's out. So thank you, Dave.
All right, man.
You're welcome.
Great. Now my week is shot.
Yep. No productivity. Just watch television. There you go. I'm going to read, and I'm going to eat some fruit snacks.
Good. Eat some fucking some Frosted Mini
Wheats. Well, no, that this all ties into that too, because I like to eat candy when I read. And now I'm like, I'm doing shit. Fruit snacks, man. Because in my mind, it's got made with 10% real fruit juice.
Sounds awesome.
And I hate fruit, but I'll eat the fruit snack. So there we go. But
well, then just stuff the Frosted Mini Wheats up your butt and scrape them out.
That could work. I mean, have we ever tried this in reverse to see how effective it is?
Oof, it just sounds awful.
Dare you, scientists, make this happen. The Frosted Mini Wheat reverse enema. Wait, is that a reverse enema or a regular enema?
It's like a dry enema. It's a loofah.
It's
like dry cleaning your butt.
Human centipede, this shit. But I do want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen to us today. Virtual hugs for all of you. You rock. You rule. And I'm not too cool for school and I drool. But I am Dave. That is Nate. And this has been The Selling Out Show.
Peace. Wake up to the devil.